Chapter 31. Coruscant System. Aboard the Anakin Solo. At peace with himself, Kytus stared through the bridge viewports at the stars, at the trails of running lights indicating the presence of ships arriving at or departing Coruscant. Alana was no longer afraid of him, and had accepted him instantly, with boundless affection, as her father. The Hapens were still behaving well enough, now staging raids on critical Confederation sites and resources. Kytus himself felt healthy again, fully healed for the first time since his fight with Luke. And right up to the day of Kytus's operation to capture Centerpoint, Corellia's defenses had been growing weaker, more lax. Kytus was certain this was no ploy on the part of the Corellians. GA intelligence believed that Confederation supply lines were being taxed past their limits, and Corellia was not being adequately reprovisioned. In a day, he would own Centerpoint. In a week, the major allies of the Confederation would have surrendered. This war was almost done.
Sir?
Lieutenant Tebbutt approached from the stern end of the bridge. Today, Kytus recalled, her duty station was ship security. She presented him with the duty data pad for her station.
All ship sections report secure. Anomalies and unresolved incidents are at a record low.
Excellent work.
Kytus took the data pad from her and tapped its screen, activating the hotspot acknowledging receipt of the report. He turned away, looking at the starfield again as he handed the device back to her. In his inattentiveness, he released it a moment too early. Tebbutt juggled and dropped it. It hit the bridge floor. Kytus looked at her.
My apologies, sir.
She stooped to pick up the data pad. She glanced at its screen. Kytus could see that it was undamaged. Tebbutt snapped it shut, saluted, and turned away. 2 steps later, she skidded to a stop and looked back at him.
Lieutenant?
Her voice was distant.
New anomaly.
She moved toward him again.
Sir, this is perhaps none of my business, but it has been my observation that you get rid of clothes when they become worn or stop being able to hold creases.
Kytus nodded.
Not just clothes.
Yes, sir. So why are you wearing a patched cloak? If I may ask.
Patched?
He looked down at himself. Tebbutt stooped again, then rose, bringing up the lower hem of his cloak, turning it so Kytus could see the backside. There, placed in a slightly crooked fashion, was a square cloth patch, 5 centimeters on a side, identical in color and texture to the surrounding cloak material. Kytus took the hem and stared at it. He tugged at the corner of the patch. Reluctantly, it yielded, coming up from the cloak material, revealing glue and flexible circuitry beneath. Though his good mood was spoiled, he kept the fact from his face.
We all make mistakes, Lieutenant. And it appears that one of mine was to let someone plant a beacon on me.
He undid his cloak clasps, folded the garment, and handed it to her along with the black patch.
Get that to our security technicians. I want to know its range of abilities. Soonest.
Yes, sir.
She saluted again and left. Once she was through the doors at the stern end of the bridge, Kytus looked around and found Captain Neville.
Did you see?
I did, sir.
I run a meritocracy, and the lieutenant shows merit. Put this incident on her record.
Consider it done, sir.
2 light-years outside the Corellian system, aboard the Errant Venture. The giant pleasure ship, once an Imperial Star Destroyer named Virulence, later a haven for gamblers, shoppers, and vacationers of all species and economic brackets, was oddly quiet, Han decided. Its main hangar bay was comparatively empty, devoid of the usual collection of privately owned yachts, shuttles, and transports that crowded the chamber from wall to wall. Now the only vehicles it hosted were one transport, large enough to evacuate the ship's current skeleton crew, plus a couple of starfighter squadrons, two shuttles, and the Millennium Falcon. Han slouched in the Falcon's co-pilot's seat. There were more comfortable places to be, but none was very interesting at the moment. The Errant Ventures gambling halls were all temporarily closed. The ship was serving as a staging platform for Luke's Centerpoint mission, and until this mission was done, her owner, Booster Terek, had chosen to limit staff to the minimum number of tight-lipped crew members necessary for basic functions. Below the Falcon's cockpit were spread the other operation vehicles. Mechanics and some of the other pilots, many of them Jedi, worked among the starfighters. The Antilles and Horn clans sat at a folding table between two stealth X's, playing what looked like a cutthroat game of sabacc. Luke Skywalker walked among all the starfighters, trailed by R2-D2. Han looked at the man in the pilot's seat. He scowled. He really didn't like seeing anything from this perspective.
"Think you've got it, kid?"
Jags straightened up from his latest simulation run.
"I've got it."
"You know, there have never been many people I'd let fly this baby. Chewbacca, Leia, Lando. Now you."
"She's Corellian by design. I'm full-blooded Corellian by ancestry. We'll get along just fine."
"Make sure you do."
Restless, Han turned away. This was the fifth time they'd had this conversation, or one much like it, in the last few days. Oh well, the kid wouldn't resent it too much. Jag had to understand the love of a man for his ship, didn't he? A button on the comm board lit, and Booster Terek's voice, aged and hoarse, came across the speakers.
"Jedi Recon 3 reports the Anakin Solo leading a formation of ships out of Coruscant orbit. This looks like no drill."
Han stood.
"Good luck, kid."
"You too,
Han?" "That's better."
Moments later, Han trotted down the boarding ramp, wincing at the unaccustomed, unwelcome sensation of leaving his first love in somebody else's hands. Kyle Katarn, moving easily, with C-3PO behind him, headed toward the Falcon and crossed Han's path. Han trotted past, offering the Jedi Master a wave and calling back over his shoulder to the droid,
"Don't talk them to death, Goldenrod."
"Oh, no, sir. I would never endanger a mission or my comrades through the employment of excessive verbiage, though I appreciate your levity on this matter, as I have appreciated it many, many times in the past. They say the soul of humor is repetition."
A few steps farther, and Han could no longer hear the droid over the sounds of engines being fired up and boots clattering across durasteel decks. More pilots, mechanics, and Jedi were now running into the bay from turbolift access corridors. Miri Antilles and the woman she was named for, Mirax Horn, carrying the now folded table, passed them in the other direction, hurrying toward the distant operations center of the Errant Venture. Han reached the foot of the shuttle reveille, the first member of his crew to do so. He leaned against the hull, affecting a pose of boredom, tapping his foot while he waited. Luke and Leia, he in black robes and she in brown and tan, were next. Leia looked him over.
"Sorry if we kept you waiting."
"Do Jedi even carry chronos?"
She grinned and dashed up the ramp.
"Hey, do the pre-flight checklist while you're up there."
Luke waited with Han while the others arrived. Ben, wearing a black high-necked tunic that was neither guard uniform nor dark Jedi garment, but somewhere in between. Saba Sebatine, silent and imposing in her fearsomely reptilian manner. Iella Antilles, in a black jumpsuit draped with matching utility belts, bandoliers, and backpack, her face and graying brown hair the only areas of color on her, and R2-D2, who hit the bottom of the ramp at speed and rolled up into the shuttle's belly as though he were on level ground. Luke headed up the ramp. "All present and accounted for." Han followed.
"Do you have to talk that military talk?"
"Hey, you're the one who went to the academy. I thought you'd like it."
Sial settled into her X-wing, borrowed from one of the Jedi, and she hoped she'd be able to return it in perfect shape, and ran through her checklist as the comlink crackled to life on her squadron frequency.
"Raquel, leader to squadron."
Her father's voice, and it jolted her to realize that she was finally going to fly with her father, in combat.
"Count off by number, and indicate readiness. Raquel, leader, ready."
"Raquel, too, armed and ready."
It was a woman's voice, heavily flavored by an exotic accent. Sonola Tai, the Dathomiri Jedi, one of several squadron members Sial had not met before they transferred to the Errant Venture. Tycho was next.
"Raquel 3, all green. Optimal."
His comm board was slaved to the squadron frequency, as was Sial's, and would be until the mission was well underway, a precaution implemented to keep him from informing Alliance forces of the true purpose of this mission. Sial cleared her throat.
"Raquel 4. Four lit and in the green."
Her knee began bouncing. She pressed down on it. Nerves. She had never flown an X-Wing in genuine combat, all of her live-fire experience having been with A-Wings and Olefs. But she'd flown X-Wings before she'd ever handled an airspeeder, starting when she was a child, when her father would take her up in a twin-seat trainer and hand over the controls. She knew the X-Wing like a housebound office drone knew the family sofa. Other members of the squadron counted off, their roll call suggesting a Starfighter Command Hall of Fame. 5, Corin Horn, leading the second flight. 6, Twill, an unknown quantity, a Rodian Jedi whom Sial had never heard of. 7, Tyria Tainer, a Jedi who had flown with Wedge long ago before Sial was born. 8, Cheris K. Hanadi, one-time head vibroblade instructor for Starfighter Command.
"Rake 9, optimal."
That was Jaina Solo, leading the third flight. Zek called in as 10. Volu Knife, a Kuwadi woman who had flown with Rogue Squadron during the Yuuzhan Vong War, was 11. Wes Jansen, 12, asked,
"Is it over?"
Nerves. Sial wasn't nervous about the prospect of dying, no more than usual. What terrified her was that she might manage to look like a rookie in front of her father and her father's friends. Dying would be less painful. In the belly of the troop carrier shuttle broadside, Kip Duron snapped his visor shut and turned to Dr. Saya.
"What do you think?"
Saya looked him over. He was dressed identically, in a good simulation of the all-black Galactic Alliance Guard uniform, though his helmet visor was still up. He nodded.
"Not bad. At least you have the build to carry it off."
He patted his own, more expansive stomach.
"They're going to take one look at me and think, 'Rear echelon bantha fodder.'"
Kip looked back across the personnel bay of the broadside at the other ersatz guard troops, Jedi such as Valin Horn and Jaden Kor among them, anonymous behind their visors. He raised his own visor and shouted back across the troops,
"What's our motto?"
They responded with a single, well-practiced roar,
"Let the enemy do the work!"
Kip nodded and gave them an appreciative smile.
"That's the spirit."
Aboard the Anakin Solo, Captain Neville approached Kydus in his usual quiet fashion.
boarding shuttles and rogue squadron are positioned, sir. They report ready to jump.
Kytus nodded, keeping his eyes closed. He could feel them, the specks of life that constituted the famous starfighter squadron, and the clusters of life representing the anonymous commandos and guard troopers who would spearhead the assault on Centerpoint Station. All around them were the greater masses of life force, the crews of the capital ships of this operation. And from them, probabilities and eventualities began streaming, glimpses of possible futures, some in logical succession, some mutually contradictory or exclusive. Kytus could focus on any one of them to see the likely next few minutes of a subject's life. But he did not. He couldn't afford to fragment his attention now, and he didn't need to know the fate of every insignificant man or woman under his command. Maintaining his Sith battle meditation through a hyperspace jump would be tricky enough, but he felt he was ready. He opened his eyes and turned to Neville. Go. The Quarren turned and gestured to his communications officer. The word was given. A moment later, the starfield beyond the viewports seemed to elongate and twist as the task force made the jump to hyperspace. Corellian Space, near Centerpoint Station. Rakehell Squadron dropped out of hyperspace, the stars snapping back to single unwinking gleams, and directly ahead of Sial was Centerpoint Station in all its majestic homeliness. A round-tipped cylinder 350 kilometers long, with the center third bulging out to a width of 100 kilometers, it was the largest artificial construction she had ever seen, and even at her current distance, hundreds of clicks away, it seemed vast. Alongside it, a super-star destroyer would appear as a speck. And there were specks nearing it. She saw tiny triangles and lozenge shapes hurtling toward the station, and more moving from the station's vicinity to intercept them. Names began popping up on her sensor board. Anakin Solo, Vinsor, Panther Star, Saxon's Pride, Rogue One, Rogue Two, Rogue Three. Sial's breath caught. Rogue Squadron was here, the fighter unit Luke Skywalker and her father had founded, the elite force whose reputation alone was enough to turn back some enemies. Well, she wouldn't be fighting them. She flew in the same force they did. Her assignment here was simple. Serve as Tycho's wingmate. See that he made it back to the Alliance force as soon as their comm boards were unslaved and would allow direct communication.
Rakehell leader to Rakes.
Wedge's voice did not suggest that he was rattled by the fact that his former command was ahead in the battle zone. Perhaps he hadn't seen them on his sensors.
Reveille reports ready. Her target is the Anakin Solo. We'll follow her in, shooting. Do remember to miss. 3-4, you can follow us in if you like, but I have a feeling that your participation here might be seen as treasonous.
Leader 3.
Tycho sounded similarly unconcerned.
No, I'll follow. Holocams blazing away. The recordings could prove interesting later.
As you wish. Don't get shot. I don't want Winter hunting me down.
No, you don't.
Tycho's shuttle, Han Solo visible at the controls, moved out ahead of the Rakehells and accelerated toward the distant conflict.